Welcome to this episode of the Driven Engineers podcast, brought to you by Matchtech Recruitment. Today's guest is a dynamic motorsport presenter, producer, and event host. Her short career has been nothing short of impressive so far. Starting out while still studying, she's worked with prestigious brands such as the likes of Aston Martin, Williams F1, and Daytona Motorsport. Her journey is a blend of hands-on racing, sim racing, and interviewing some of the biggest names in the industry. Our guest is a passionate advocate for women in motorsport. She is currently involved with the Jamie Chadwick Race Series and actively working with various organizations to promote diversity in motorsport. With a first-class honours degree in media and performance from the University of Salford, she quickly signed with WTF Talent Agency, where she hosts various shows across social media. I'm delighted to introduce to the podcast today, Amber Jones. Hello, Amber. How are you?
I'm great, thank you. That was a lovely introduction. I'm like, oh, wow, yeah, I did do that. And, oh, I did do that. So it's really nice. You sort of got everything in there, which was good.
I tried to cover everything off, but didn't want to take too much away from what you're going to sort of go through today as well. So really appreciate you taking the time out for joining us today. I know you've got a really busy schedule, so it is much appreciated.
No, thank you for having me.
If it's okay with you, I'm going to dive straight in with the first question.
Yes, let's get into it.
Okay, so you've had a fascinating journey so far in motorsport and media. Can you tell us about how you first got into presenting and what really drew you towards motorsport as well?
Yeah, so in terms of motorsport, I like go back to it was my father that got me into it, but he's like, no, it wasn't at all. He's always watched Formula One, and I didn't take any interest until I was about 16, 17, but I loved go-karting. I was obsessed with go-karting since I was young. And he's always said, you didn't get that from me. He's like, I only watched Formula One. There's no other motorsport in his sort of life. So I wanted to be an actor as well. And I think my parents had that struggle that a lot of, you know, parents of anyone that wants to go to drama school, their kids want to go to drama school has. And they were like, we don't want you to go and come out of it and be a struggling actor that's working in a pub for 10 years. They can't get their big break. And they didn't want that for me, but they wanted me to choose my own path. So he was like, why don't you, you know, do acting and something else? I had a lot of friends at school always saying to me, you know, you should be a presenter. We used to do this Jeremy Kyle warm up in drama classes. And I was always picked to be Jeremy Kyle. So everyone was like, you should be a presenter. And I think that's when it started to come to fruition a little bit. And then, yeah, my dad was like, just study both. And at the end of your course, you can choose whether you want to carry on the acting or you want to do the presenting. So that's when it kind of came to life. And then we were watching Formula One time and he was like, why don't you do motorsport presenting? And I was like, yeah, I've never thought about that really. I never put the two and two together. So I owe it all to my dad, honestly. And then I went to university, Salford University, studied acting and presenting. But I just fell out of love very quickly with the acting and just fell so much in love with the presenting side of things. And then I worked with my university's racing team. So from there, you know, I did a lot of motorsport presenting and producing. And I was the head of media. So I drove all the social media channels. I would interview, you know, the engineers or our drivers or whatever it was. And that really got me seen. I think because I was so proactive at university, I got picked up by other people and I was posting, you know, show reels that I'd made myself at university on LinkedIn. And that's how I got picked up. So it was quite a seamless journey, I would say.
That's really good. Do you want me to ask him what your father did for a job?
Yeah, he's a travel agent. So He actually worked with Formula One teams sometimes and worked with Formula One in terms of the travel industry. But yeah, he only really liked Formula One and that was it. There's no other motorsport in his background.
Fantastic. So you saw it on the TV on a Sunday afternoon and kind of was a little bit hooked and yeah, fancy doing that.
Yeah, it was actually, again, and this is why I owe everything to him, because he mentioned one day, you know, the Formula One drivers start in go-karting. And then I think from there it clicked because I loved go-karting so much and I did want to be a driver, but obviously it's so expensive. So he was like, no chance. I'm not paying for that. So I think that moment was the light bulb moment for me. I was like, oh, they started in karting. And then, yeah, I started watching it with him when I was like 16, 17. But it was more of a running joke of how annoying Formula One was, because I'd call my dad, you know, when I was 13 to be like, can you come pick me up from, you know, the local town? And he'd be like, no, we're watching the Formula One. And it was actually annoying growing up. I was like, the Formula One, get the Formula One off. And then in the end, I just loved it so much as I grew up.
That's fantastic. That's great. Do you still get a chance to go-kart now? Do you still try and dabble in a little bit of go-karting?
Yes, I actually do a lot more now. I think I stopped for quite a while as I got older. And then luckily, I think obviously because being in this industry, I've had so many chances to race in go-karts. I did an endurance race recently, 7.5 hours. But obviously, you know, wow. You split that up within a team. So you're doing about, I mean, it's up to you, but you can do up to 2 to 3 hours of endurance racing. And that was really, really nice because it brings everyone together and you have your strategies and your pit stops. So it's really lovely to be involved in that.
That's great. That's awesome. So your career began as a freelance presenter then. What were some of the key challenges for you and first kind of opportunities that you encountered right at the beginning?
Quite a difficult question, I'd say, because I do think my journey has been more seamless than others. I think it's quite hard, you know, to get into this industry, whereas my first job was with Aston Martin, and the way I got that was because I knew an engineer, but the engineer had obviously saw all of the work I'd done before. So it doesn't mean to say just because you know someone, they're going to just hire you off the bat. But because I obviously had shown a lot of my work to him and he saw it on LinkedIn, when they needed a presenter, I sort of came to mind. So from there, it was pretty seamless. And because I was at university, it wasn't, you know, I need to get my next job to pay the bills. I had time on my hands because I was studying at the same time. So you have your student loan. Of course, you need to pay that back. But for the meantime, you know, your rent is probably covered. External bills are probably covered. So I was just sort of taking the jobs as they came and been super grateful that I actually had these big jobs whilst at university. But now coming out of that, you know, I'm not university, you know, I do have all the bills and things to pay for, the real adult life when you come out university. It's just more being proactive. That's what I always go back to is who can I speak to? You know, what company can I contact or where can I network to make sure that those jobs are seamless and they are flowing? Because that's the difficulty of any freelancer, any self-employed person will know. You can't relax. You can't be like, okay, it's fine. I can take 2 months off because where are you going to get the money to pay the bills? And that's the difficult thing. So for me, I think going to university was definitely an integral part of my journey because it just gave me time to build my showreel, to get all those like contacts and network to the max. So by the time I come out of university, I'm in a pretty good position. But it can be difficult, you know, at times. It's a very up and down process, I think, being in this industry.
Sure. Let's talk a little bit about the Aston Martin job then. When you worked with Aston Martin, you were hosting the International Women in Engineering Day. And I think you did that for two consecutive years in a row.
Yeah.
What was it like working with Aston Martin F1? What's it like inside and behind the scenes?
I remember I was in second year university. So the first time was definitely terrifying. It was so terrifying. I got the call up like 2 days before I headed down to Silverstone. And yeah, it was really terrifying. But when I got there, I just felt so relaxed. I think the whole train journey, because I was living up north, and the whole train journey, I was like, oh my gosh, I never thought I'd be working with a Formula One team so early on in my career. It was my first job really in the presenting realm. I thought, no, surely not. But once I got there, I don't know what it was. Like the environment was just so comfortable and everyone was so lovely and it felt like I was meant to be there. So a lot of those nerves really flew away. And the engineers, you know, they loved their job. They were so welcoming to me. So before we even obviously started getting into the hosting part of things, I just felt very calm. I was like, wow, you know, it's a beautiful place. They were obviously talking about constructing the next building, which they have now, the new building. So it was really nice. I think they're an amazing brand to work with, I definitely say, because they're still, you know, up and coming in Formula One, only a few years since they rebranded to Aston Martin. So maybe there's a more humble side to them as opposed to brands that have been in there for years and, you know, they might not have that humbleness anymore. But yeah, it was definitely an amazing place to be.
That's great. And they are making significant strides, really, with some of the signings. Obviously, we're in a week where they've just acquired Adrian Newey.
Yeah.
So it's going to be really interesting to see where that takes them after some of the changes of 2026 as well that are upcoming. So
yeah,
fantastic. So from your work with Aston Martin and the other roles that you've done, how do you perceive the current state of diversity in motorsport at the moment?
In terms of, you know, getting more women inclusion in motorsport, I think we're making great movements at the minute. And obviously I work with, you know, from grassroots all the way up to Formula One. So I'm seeing amazing changes at the minute. And it's not just from, you know, women participation from the racing point of view, it's engineering, it's the fans, it's all the different roles in the motorsport industry. So I think we're making great progress, and you're always going to have little comments from people that maybe don't want to see this movement happen, but that's just, it's always going to happen, you know, and hopefully we can drown that all out. But when it comes to more of, I'd say, a race part of the diversity aspect, I don't think we've conquered that yet. And I'm, you know, a mixed race woman. So I'm like, okay, there's both sides that I can look at here from my own personal experiences. And the woman side of things are really improving, but I'm not seeing so much in terms of race. However, so the opposite of that, I can say we're seeing some movements in terms of the engineering side of things. But when it comes to more media, I'm not seeing as much push. And when it comes to drivers as well, you know, the racing side of things, I'm not seeing as much as a push there. But when it comes to engineering and STEM-based subjects, they are really trying to push, you know, different ethnicities and minorities in there. So I think everything's at different paces at the minute. It's like the women in motorsport movement is skyrocketing, but this part is going a little bit slower. But as long as we're making progress, that's all that matters.
So would it be fair to say that there's still some work to be done?
Yes, definitely. I mean, I think there's work to be done in all sectors, because, you know, we want to create opportunities for everyone, you know, in motorsport. And that's the work that I try to do. So if you obviously look at my work at the minute, it is around, you know, making motorsport accessible from every different, you know, pathway, every different career. But there's always work to be done. And I think if we keep talking about it and we keep addressing these problems, then that's how we can move forward, by hosting events or hosting panels where you're talking about it and just keeping that discourse moving, and then actually doing something. It's like, okay, we've spoken about it, how do we do something about it now? Whether that's, you know, more work experience opportunities, or inviting, you know, different ethnicities, minorities into factories, Formula One teams, something like that. So it's just keeping it going. It's not ticking that box of, oh, let's talk about it once a year and then we never revisit it ever again.
That's great. That's some really good insights there. I really appreciate that. So you're an inspiring role model, right? People see you on social media channels. They see you on TV, and people look up to you and want to do what you do, Amber. Have you got any role models yourself, any women role models in particular, not necessarily in motorsport or Formula One, but any role models that you particularly look up to?
I mean, there's so many in Formula One and in motorsport, because instantly I think of, you know, Natalie Pinkham and Naomi Schiff, and there's so many amazing women, you know, Laura Winter, and I can reel off so many of them, and they're all so inspiring, all have different backgrounds as well, all different skill sets. So that's quite comforting, because I think people that, you know, want to be presenters, it can be quite scary at times of, I need to be this type of way and I need to have this journey. And you don't. You look at all the different people that are presenting in various different motorsport series, and they all have different backgrounds. So it's all about, you know, finding your own feet. What's your style? And your journey will happen when it's meant to happen. And that's why I get inspired by these women so much, because, you know, Natalie Pinkham was doing a range of different sports before she got into it. Laura Winter's skill set is massive. She does loads of different sports. She did the Olympics recently. And then Naomi Schiff, a racing driver. So I can look at all these women and get so inspired by them. Ariana Bravo, who does F1 TV and Channel 4, she was in a corporate role beforehand. So, you know, you don't have to come from a typical background or have that typical skill set. You really can make your own journey. I think that's what I'm finding now, because I never imagined that I would be doing half of the roles that I'm doing now. I never imagined I would be doing them at 23. I was like, oh, I'll be doing them when I'm 30 or 28 and I've worked, you know, in this job and moved my way up. And your journey just changes so quickly. I never thought I'd do driver media training. I was like, that was nothing I ever thought of when I left university. So you just have to go on your own journey. And that's what these women have really taught me.
That's just moving on then. Wanted to talk a little bit around the Jamie Chadwick series and some of the work that you did.
Yeah.
Could you just give us some insights and just tell us about what you did, what you covered, and the events looked like?
Yeah, the Jamie Chadwick series is honestly amazing because it brings, you know, young girls to Daytona's tracks all over the UK, and they get hands-on experience with Jamie at selected rounds as well. So where I come in is Daytona. I have a lovely relationship with Daytona, and they just invited me to come down and just experience the taste today of what the Jamie Chadwick series has to offer. And then on my way there, they were like, can you do a Q&A with Jamie? I was like, you're so lucky that I know everything about Jamie Chadwick. I was on my way. So, you know, I was like, oh gosh, if it was a driver I didn't know, you're scrambling, you're getting all your notes and research. So obviously I was so thrilled to be asked anyway, but I was like, yes, I don't even need to research too much because I know everything about Jamie Chadwick, another inspiring woman in motorsport. And yeah, I just did a Q&A with her. And then from there, they were like, we'd love to bring you on, you know, more to do media training with our drivers and to do more sessions with Jamie. So we went to Williams recently, the Williams factory. Jamie gave a tour to all the girls and we did a Q&A, and then they had to go on the Sims in their esports lounge. So this series is just designed to obviously help girls at grassroots and then hopefully further their careers after they come out of the Jamie Chadwick series. It's just a place where they can, you know, work on their racecraft and have a nice community. They can, you know, learn other things, the media side of things, and, you know, how can they get sponsors and whatever it is. So it's a really good place for them to sort of start their career. And doing that with Jamie Chadwick, I mean, who else would you want to do that? She's amazing, such an inspiration in this sport. So hopefully the girls feel inspired and it might push them a little bit harder because they've got Jamie Chadwick basically watching them do this series. It's really amazing. I'm so glad that Daytona do it. So I'd love to see the series go on for a number of years and bring girls in and just, you know, just get more girls into motorsport really after karting. You can be in karting for a long time, and then it's those next steps that they struggle. It's, do I go into single-seaters? Do I go into GT cars? I've got no funding. How do I get sponsors? How do I use social media? There's so many questions left unanswered. So that's what we're trying to answer, basically.
That's good. And do you think things like the Jamie Chadwick series are going to be crucial for the future of motorsport and the future of F1 as well?
I think so, definitely, because, you know, if you have someone that started in the Jamie Chadwick series and then they find themselves in F1 or a different series, they will always go back to that of, oh, I found my craft here and Jamie really helped me. And it's the same with Ginetta. I do a lot of work with Ginetta and they've had so many great drivers start there. And those cars are the best cars to learn in because they've got no assists, nothing. So if you can drive a car that has no assist, once you jump in one that's got your ABS, traction control, whatever it is, you're fine because you know how to do it without that. And it's so similar to what the Jamie Chadwick, you know, school is and series is trying to offer. It's grassroots, learn everything here so that you can take that as your career flourishes.
That's good. I wanted to talk about your current role working for WTF1, Amber. You recently joined there as part of the presenter lineup. It's a platform with quite a huge following, to be fair. How has this role differed from your previous roles? And can you just tell us a little bit more about it?
Yes, it's so different. Like, that's a very good question. It is completely different to what I do because WTF1 is, you know, social media based. So it's just all your socials, your TikToks, Instagram, YouTube. It's quick, flashy content. And it's definitely a lot difficult because my main role is interviewing and teaching, and it has more of that serious feel to it, whereas WTF1 is very lighthearted, very playful. So you just really have to strip back everything you know because it's a content creator role. And when you look at content creators on TikTok, they're very open, brash, you know, you see everything, they're super authentic. Whereas if you're an event host, it's you but polished. You know, it's, you're not going to go in and start swearing or being crazy, you know, it's the very polished, refined version of you. Whereas a role like WTF1, they want you to be crazy and brash, and you're meant to connect with fans, not sort of connect with other reporters. So it's definitely completely different, but it's a great platform. And, you know, the first presenters, the founders of it, you know, they were amazing. They built something up so great. And obviously I see them every now and then and we have a lovely chat about the channel and the future of it. And it's, you know, it's difficult because it's predominantly a male audience. I always knew I was going to have that challenge of a female coming into it. A lot of the audience don't want to see a female coming into it. They want two men, that lad banter. But a lot of the audience really, you know, received it very well. So it's nice to be attached to, definitely, but it's completely different to what I do with all my other roles. And you know, you'll see my Instagram and it's inspiring and motivational. And then WTF1 is basically F1 gossip, if I can put it like that.
Well, I'm looking forward to seeing some of the content moving forward of that. It's going to be quite interesting to see. So for any aspiring presenters, anybody wanting to be the future Amber Jones, have you got any advice that you would give them? If you could wind the clock back, I don't know, 5 or 6 years when you were going through university or thinking about making the moves into presenting and acting after college, what advice would you give yourself or anybody looking to aspire to do that in the future?
Yeah, I've actually given quite a lot of advice recently because all the panels that I do, you know, we hold like a Q&A at the end for anyone to be asked questions. So it's quite nice when I'm a host, I actually get, you know, questions thrown at me, which is really lovely. So I've given a lot of advice recently. But if it's in terms of, you know, one big one is, do I go to university or do I just go straight into it and just try and be freelance from the get-go? It depends on what you want to do. But obviously, I found university so important because you've got access to camera equipment, audio equipment, everything. So you can learn your skills, make those mistakes at university. You know, you're not actually probably on a big job and you've made a mistake and you've gone, oh, no, I've just ruined that forever. So for me, I do think it's important, but you don't have to. If you really don't want to go to university, you don't need to. We're in this day and age of social media where you've got phones, the technology is crazy that you've got at home, so you can build your own show reel. You don't need anything expensive. You can grab your phone, get on TikTok, you know, do a post-race analysis, talk about, you know, your favorite things in motorsport or the sports industry, whatever it is. So it's getting that experience, whether it's at home, whether you go to your local track and you ask your friend to film you, or networking is the most important thing, I'd say. And that makes me think of going to local tracks, is go down to a track, whatever race it is, whether it's Caterham's or GT cars, Formula One, whatever it is, and try and speak to people face to face and just ask them, you know, what's the best way of getting into this industry? You know, can I get more experience with you? LinkedIn as well is the best place. And a lot of people are on LinkedIn now, and I've spoken to a lot of people telling them to get on LinkedIn. And I see them posting all the time, so it's quite lovely to see they actually take my advice. But just post about what you do. You know, if you want to be a presenter, like I say, do a video in your bedroom and then post it on LinkedIn. And it doesn't matter if it gets one like, 10 likes, 100 likes. It's just your own portfolio to put out there. Someone will see that. Someone will pick up on it, whether it's the first month you post or 2 years later. You know, I've been posting on LinkedIn since I was... must have been 19, 20. And, you know, the traction builds up over a number of years. So it's all about just putting yourself out there, speaking to people, networking, being confident, but that confidence will definitely come with time as well.
That's really good advice. And I think that's good advice for any sector. The LinkedIn platform is good to put your own brand out there almost, but to also let everybody know what your capabilities are and what you've been involved in as well. So beyond motorsport and beyond automotive as well. But that's really good advice. Okay, I wanted to talk to you a little bit more about the International Women in Engineering Day. We touched on it briefly earlier on, but could you tell me what the event entailed when you helped Aston Martin? What did you actually do in that event, and what did you come away thinking?
Yeah, so the event is really just to dive into the journeys of the women on the panel, and they were in all different roles in engineering, all the different sectors in that industry. So it was lovely, obviously, just to see how they started, how they found it, what were the challenges, you know, what are the highlights of it, because we want the people listening to it, you know, to take some advice away and hopefully be inspired what the next steps can be, really. And it's lovely because, yes, we want to keep it positive. Yes, we want to talk about the most amazing things. But I think it's really important to highlight those challenges as well, because there are lots of challenges. And it's, you know, have you faced any sexism, or, you know, what's been maybe the hardest part of the job that you can help someone maybe overcome that if they find themselves in that situation? So it's very, very insightful. And I think because it's with a big brand like Aston Martin, people are like, I want to work with Aston Martin. How do I get there? So you have to really show the journeys of these people, obviously working in these positions. But they also have a lot of students on a placement with Aston Martin. And I think that's the one that a lot of the people watching resonated with the most, because they're still studying, but they're working with an amazing brand. They take a year out, you know, to study. It's their placement year. And a lot of people in the sort of questions box, when they can send in questions, were asking a lot about that. And it shows that Aston Martin is accessible, you know, so we need to highlight events like this because otherwise people wouldn't know that's even a thing. There's a lot of people that didn't realize that you could actually do that. So it's just important, I think, to just keep highlighting, you know, how do people get here? We can actually get more women. We want to inspire them. There's so many amazing roles. It's going back to what I said, you know, beforehand, not everyone's journey is the same. So I find it to be, you know, really great event, and they hold it every year. And obviously they're trying to do different things with it. So it's super, super important if you're looking to make those first steps into the industry.
Brilliant. That's really good insights. Thank you very much. Okay, so looking forward then, Amber, what's next for you? Obviously, you've joined WTF1 recently. That's going to take up quite a lot of your time, I can imagine. But what's next? Are there any upcoming projects or goals that you're particularly excited about?
Yes, we've got a few really exciting projects this year with Ferrari and flying out to Abu Dhabi and Italy. So really, really excited for those. And like I say, no day is the same in this industry, you know, whether it's interviewing people or if it's racing or sim racing, it's all super, super different. I'm getting my racing license as well. So that's something not exactly job related, but still motorsport industry related. And then, yes, some really lovely projects in terms of media training. So like I say, never expected that I would be doing this. But I found myself naturally fall into this role because, you know, people are asking me in terms of just a general presenter, what skill set do I need to have? How do I hold myself? You know, well, how can I come across better on camera and all these things? And I was helping a lot of people with that. But then when I was at tracks or working with the Jamie Chadwick series or whatever it is, I also found myself helping the drivers. And naturally, you know, people then started contacting me of, can we hire you to you know, to talk to our drivers? And it's not just about how they come across on camera, because, you know, that's probably the most simple part of it is, please don't swear too much, you know, stand up straight. Don't start talking really badly about your competitors on track. That's all the basics of media training. But it is about your brand. It's about sponsors. It's about making sure you do actually show your personality. I think people think that media trained people are like robots because they can't say anything, they can't be authentic, they can't be brash, but you can. You just don't want to ruin any of your opportunities and don't want to, you know, really annoy your sponsors or whatever it is. So that's a lot of the work that I'm doing at the minute, which is I actually find really, really exciting. And maybe people will think that's probably the least exciting part of my job because the racing is probably really exciting, or interviewing Formula One stars or whoever it is. But I really, really enjoy the media training side of things and working with young drivers because it's just nice to see that they're progressing in their career and you're like, oh, I helped them when they were at the start. So yeah, I think that's one of my favorite things I'm doing at the minute.
That's right. I forgot you did media training as part of your role as well. So that's, thank you for highlighting that part. So in terms of interviewing, it's not often that you're on the receiving end of an interview yourself. You're often interviewing a lot of people in and around racetracks and in the pits and things. I'm going to put you on the spot a little bit. Who's been the most interesting person that you've interviewed?
Oh, the most interesting. That's a difficult question, really. The most interesting. Because the person that always comes to mind in terms of like my favorite person to interview, which is cliche and we've already spoken about her, but it always is Jamie Chadwick. And I feel like she does fall into the interesting realm as well, because she is making history at the minute. You know, she's doing amazing, being the first Indy Next woman race winner. So I think I'm going to stick with Jamie Chadwick because there's always something new to talk about. You know, she's not brash like your Max Verstappens, that when you're going to interview them, they're going to say something crazy and then it's like, oh my gosh. She's very poised, but she's still really interesting. And when you're talking to her, you're just engulfed in everything that she's saying. And obviously she's really inspiring as well. So I think I'm going to stick with Jamie Chadwick, I think.
Fantastic. That's great. I'm going to have to reach out to Jamie Chadwick, see if I can get her on the podcast in the future.
Yes.
Because I've read so much about her. She is fantastic. And in terms of, you know, ED&I and diversity, she brings a lot to the table with that as well.
Yeah, exactly. Honestly, she is such an inspiration in everything in motorsport. So if you can get her on, that would be great.
Good. Amber, we're going to wrap things up. I want to thank you so much for your time today. Again, I know how busy you've been, but we've had a fantastic insight to your career, albeit in a short space of time, and really enjoyed some of the insights that you provided around some of the events and the series that you've been involved with. So I'd like to thank you. Thank you for being on the podcast, and please keep in touch, and we will hopefully speak to you again in the future.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you so much for having me.